Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. You can learn more about the show by visiting the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And if you want to find out more about our station, you can visit kuci.org. And our socials are KUCI FM. If you want to find out about being a guest on my show, you can send me an email to Janine, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, at kuci.org. Okay, standing by to join me to kick off the second half of the show is Professor Stephanie Reich, UCI Professor of Education and expert on youth and social media. She's joining us now. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for calling in.
My pleasure.
Could you tell me about your role as Professor of Education and expert on youth and social media?
So I am trained as a developmental community psychologist. UCI is kind of interesting because the psychologists are scattered across numerous departments.
Okay.
In the School of Education, I work in a variety of areas, really trying to understand the social context of children's lives, and that includes in the family, at school, and digital spaces as well. And so I got involved in media research really with my postdoc. I have kind of continued with that as media has evolved. My focus is really about developmental processes and how media connects with that. So it's less about the media and more about the kids.
Okay.
And how media is a part of how they develop.
I see a lot of articles and research on the impact of social media. Do you feel like this has gotten worse over the past couple of years?
So children and teens' mental health has gotten worse over time. But but whether it's caused by media is a bigger question. And so the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, you know, was tasked this past year to try to synthesize the literature to sort of see what are the impacts.
Yeah.
And the challenge is that the research to date doesn't really look at causal relationships, like does media cause this, right? And so part of that, there's quite a few reasons why we can't get specifically to that question.
Okay.
One is that like social media is like a really big term that involves a whole lot of things.
I know.
Right. And
yeah.
So we focus much more on the affordances, like what are the features or aspects of media and how that intersects, enables, or constrains behavior. And so that's different. But even if you like the same platform, like if, you know, you have two 13-year-olds on Instagram.
Yes.
Depending on what they're doing and who they're connecting with, they're having really different experiences. Like if they're looking at how to decorate cakes, that's really different than if they're looking at how to be self-injurious.
Yes.
And so it's hard to make a blanket statement about social media as one giant thing causing this other thing versus understanding better the ecology. And so it's a harder question to answer than that.
The one thing I have heard a lot, and I have daughters, is that, you know, comparing yourself. Or thinking you need to get this product or be like this because your life will be better. So I've just heard that there's pressure. There's so much pressure.
Yeah, and it depends on like how some of the dispositions kids have. So some people are really more prone to social comparisons than others, and they might be more vulnerable. There's also like evidence if you do like what we call upward social comparison. Like if you look at people and think like they're prettier, they're having more fun, they're fitter or whatever, you feel worse about yourself.
Sure.
But if you do more downward social comparison where you think like, oh, I look better than people who seem less happy or less fit than me, you feel better about yourself.
Yes.
So social comparison alone is not the piece. It's sort of how prone you are to do it and how you do it is going to change how you feel about it.
Wow. So could we dive into the assessment of the impact of social media on the health and well-being of adolescents and children? Maybe, you know, some key findings, anything you want to share?
Sure. You know, so the report, so consensus reports for national academies is we basically review a huge body of literature and try to synthesize that and say, like, what do we know? What do we don't know? What might be some key findings? So part of it is that we need better research, that there needs to be more transparency into, like, what social media is, what kids are doing. And part of that is that for a lot of companies, it's intellectual property for why they say they can't share stuff. So we actually just need more transparency practice to understand what people are doing.
Okay.
Screen time alone is just not a really great metric. It doesn't get, like, what you're doing, who you're doing with it, how you feel about it. It's really about what you're not doing when you're on it. It's kind of more of like a displacement of things, which is interesting too, but it doesn't get at that same kind of mechanism. So we need better research And we need like better definitions, like not social media as a big bucket and that all kids as the same, but maybe some are more vulnerable than others. Some might be more positioned to get benefit and some might be more positioned to have harms. And we don't have great research to really articulate that.
Yeah.
We feel that there's the committee really feels like we need more training and education around digital media literacy.
Mm-hmm.
That you know could be within schools, although you need some funding. You can't just add more things for teachers to do.
Exactly.
They need capacity building training yeah. and resources.
Yes.
But schools are a really good place. And especially now that things are moving to being more like algorithmically based, that you have, you know, if you could understand how algorithms work, if you understand what's persuasive design, that's like all those features that make social media sticky
mm-hmm.
For why you stay on longer and it's harder to separate. And the stickiness is, it's like stickier for adolescents because of developmentally what is developing and what's still developing.
Yes.
And so there's for sure needs for training and education. There needs to be more transparency in design. There needs to be more research in these areas in which there's greater, like, look into what's happening within the companies in social media, but there also has to be more funding in areas. So
yes.
Those come together. And then for sure, like, there are just bad actors on social media, right? So you do have cyberbullying, you do have cyber flashing, sextortion, deep fakes. Like there's sexual image-based sexual violence and
right.
things that happen, trafficking, drug dealing. Right? There's lots of bad
Everything.
Things about people too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's not really a lot of great oversight, reporting, getting help, which goes also to education for young people, but also companies having easier ways to report and manage that, having other ways to store, share data to law enforcement. You know, so there's a bigger issue too
yeah.
about just greater tech.
I mean, with all the advancements of everything and as things continue to grow and new technologies come out, we're just going to have more education and training and ways to protect kids, all ages. If possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And currently, like, educators don't necessarily have a lot of training in digital media literacy, and especially if they're veteran teachers, you know, their credential programs are really long ago.
Mm-hmm.
To expect just educators to add is a big ask. To ask parents to do that when we don't provide any education for parents around, you know, parenting around media, that's a big ask.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's, like, the whole system is not really built in ways that are really helping children reap the benefits of online spaces and be protected from those possible risks.
I recently went to the Gen Z Wellness Summit at UCLA. The Semmel Institute put it on, and it was, have you heard of this?
Mm-hmm. I've heard it, but I haven't.
It was incredible. I can send you a link. All the videos from the sessions are online. It was so powerful. Some students did performance art. They did spoken word poetry, and there were celebs there. There were different people talking about, mental health struggles they've been through, like the actress Lily Reinhart. It was really insightful to put yourself in the shoes of Gen Z. And they talk about how they have a problem, you know, scrolling and staying up late, or just what it's done to them. And it was so impactful, so insightful.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, in the U.S., we have the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, which is really about, like, collection of data, and it really only protects children who are under 13. And currently, like, there's not, even once you turn 13, there's not as much protection from the 13 to 18 range. And so other countries have been working with having more developmentally appropriate design that would really differentiate these different ages. Like, if you're an 8-year-old online, that's really different than if you're a 17-year-old online.
Okay.
California has legislation that has passed that keeps being held up in injunction, has not been put into practice, that it'll be an age-appropriate design code, which will hopefully get at some of these pieces. But yeah, like, we need to have more structure, regulation, and policy at a much higher level that's helping kids.
Yes,
because they're cognitively still developing to have those self-regulatory skills, and so expecting them to manage their own online behaviors is a really tall ask.
What have you seen as far as your work, you know, in general, like what's happened in the pandemic, post-pandemic? You know, do you find students reaching out to you more? Is that what led to a lot of your research?
I've sort of always worked in this space, but I've been working on a couple of things of trying to really have youth be experts. So I've been working with a K-12 school for now the second year, working with the high schoolers to better understand online behaviors and then create educational interventions for eighth graders. So it's like a near peer mentoring to see like if high schoolers can leverage their expertise to help younger students manage online spaces more healthfully. And so that's been an exciting space. We're also working on teens creating a parenting guide about how to parent around media.
That's good.
There's a child voice to it. Yeah. Because I think we position kids as victims and not also as experts with mm-hmm. unique needs. They know this really well. And so it's nice. We've been really trying to partner more.
Yes.
My grad students and I have been doing some work on image-based sexual violence. So things like what the prevalence of like cyber flashing, sextortion. So cyber flashing is just like physical flashing, but it happens through a digital device. So you're dropped an image or video of sexual nature. And typically it's unwanted. And what we're finding is from like 11 to 17 year olds, it's mostly sent by strangers and mm-hmm. they don't tell anyone about it. So we've been trying to understand more of like the sexual component. We've been serving emergency medical professionals about what they understand about these topics and how often they're seeing it in their clinical practice.
That's great.
We are finding that and providers are reporting that they have cases of suicidal ideation and attempts that are associated with these kinds of experiences, but mm-hmm. nobody's really talking about them. So we've been really, you know, my lab has really been trying to look at sort of the positives and the negatives and better understand the psychology for kids and how best to support them.
Yeah. That is a really tough thing to have, to see something and then keep it trapped inside of you. You feel like you can't talk to anyone, you know, when you think about the impact.
Yeah, and they're really good resources. And if you Google, try to go online search for what to do, you don't get good help. Mm-hmm. There aren't real clear resources for what do you even do, even if you want to get help.
Yeah. Are there things, legislation, that you would like to see passed in this country? You mentioned there are certain things going on in other countries that we don't have here.
Yeah, I would love to have more like understanding. So rather than just around privacy and the collection of information for kids, which of course is hugely important,
yes.
I think there needs to be thoughts about access and design. It would be really nice that on social media accounts, when you set them up, they are defaulted to the most private and protected options. And then you could opt in to more features rather than having to know how to opt out of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Accounts default to public. If they're public, anyone can message you and contact you. So I think that it would be nice if the platforms themselves were designed for more privacy to begin with and more autonomy. It also would, the ways in which we verify age for most platforms is like you just enter your birth date and we talk with kids and they enter crazy birth dates. PhD students is talking to 8 to 11 year olds and they're like, we just picked the latest age we can think of. And so they'll say like 1915 is the year they're born. And that should be a red flag.
Oh, that is so funny. Really funny.
And you should be able to like change your age. So if you're underage and you say, oh, I was born in 2000 to set up your account. When you actually become 13, you can't correct that age to make you 13. So I was just talking to a bunch of 13-year-olds, and they're all 24 or older on Instagram and Snapchat because they have no way to change their birthday once it's entered. And so there's not like an amnesty, you know, where you can fix things once you're older too.
Right.
So there's just a lot of like basic design features would make it better for to navigate these spaces, and it would be nice for us to really recognize how old kids are. 13 is not some magical age where you now understand and are capable to do it. It's just the policy negotiated age for, you know, really what started with television.
Sure.
And so we really need to have age appropriate design that really looks at developmental capacities and alters what's accessible.
Yes.
Or not. And some things are low risk and some things are higher risk and they should have different levels of protection.
Yeah.
And I think we could have policy and regulation around that more meaningfully.
I agree completely. So I don't know if you can answer this question, but we touched on this earlier, but what, you know, if someone's listening, they're a teen and they have seen something and they're keeping it inside and it's made them feel a certain way, what advice would you give them? Like, you know, they need to talk to someone, they don't know who to reach out to.
Yeah, so SAMHSA has like a hotline for kids. I think it's actually a really good place to just like you can text it, you can call, and they can help connect you. SAMHSA also funded a Center for Excellence in Social Media and Wellbeing, which has is hard to find. If you go on the website, they have a place where you can ask questions if you're a provider, if you're a youth, if you're a parent or other person.
Yes.
And they'll, and a real human will like send you resources or will look up research and say, well, this is what we know so far. It's a really great and underutilized resource too. But I think suffering silently and alone is not good. And talking to others and getting help really matters. And there's increasingly more like hotlines and online spaces to actually get some connected supports.
And let me give that website. It's samhsa.gov. So at samhsa.gov. And I did see that in the information I posted about you on the show blog. Anything else you'd like to share with us?
No, I just think that especially for the caregivers who might be listening, that my framing is that, you know, children develop in very predictable ways. And while media keeps changing very quickly, kids develop don't. And the importance of having relationships with their caregivers stays the same. So I think having open communication and talking with your younger people in your family about what they're doing and how they feel about it and keeping that door open is going to help. And if they encounter something bad, they'll be more open to talk with you. If they things that are good, they're more likely to share that with you. And so I think if we can stop thinking of social media as something like very separate and just another part of every day life for kids, they go to school, they might go play their sport, they're online, and that parents and other important adults need to be part of that discussion with them.
Definitely. I want to just mention to listeners, you're on various advisory boards, Raising Good Gamers, Future of Childhood, Children and Screens, and Next Gen Public Media. Could you talk about Raising Good Gamers?
So each of their like advisory boards are sort of initiatives that need more input. Raising Good Gamers is really about game spaces, and it's actually Katie Salmon-Reyes in Informatics is the head of that.
Okay.
And so they have a whole range of different impacts around gaming and having less toxicity and having more inclusive spaces. And then she and Mimi Ito run Connected Camps, which is actually Minecraft servers for youth, and are having really great supports for youth, especially youth that are struggling like with grief and loss. So it's a whole initiative around the game space and making it a more thriving and elevating space rather than what historically has often been more toxic and detrimental.
Oh, that's great. And what is Next Gen Public Media? Because I have heard of that.
Yeah, it's essentially that one is because they have natives I get to talk with them about it. But part of it was that you have a lot of programming for children and you have a lot of programming for like later teens and college age. And the tween kind of space, right, the entrance into adolescence and early adolescence is sort of missed from a programming standpoint. And it's really understanding more about what the needs are for that developmental space of kids leaving childhood and moving into adolescence and having more programming that are supporting what they want.
And that's part of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, right?
The collaborative endeavor, but yeah. But that's the lead. And Sesame Street Workshop and Yams Cooney Center are heavily involved in that as well.
You are busy.
Well, that's why we do the research, right? It's not just to talk to each other. It's to improve lives. And so the many ways we can connect with groups working with youth, that's really, you know, what academics are passionate about.
If people want to get in touch with you, do you have an email you can give out or a website?
Sure. Yeah, you're welcome. People are welcome to email me. It's smreich@uci.edu. And if you just, you know, Google me in UCI, it'll come up.
I want to thank you so much for calling in. I've really enjoyed this.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you for bringing some attention to this topic.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You too.
That was Professor Stephanie Reich, UCI Professor of Education and expert on youth and social media. If you missed any part of this conversation, it will be up on the show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org, within an hour after I wrap, and I am wrapping up soon. Let's see, I want to tell you about where you can learn more about KUCI. If you visit kuci.org, you can find out more information about all of our public affairs programming, music shows. We have an incredible eclectic mix and great talent here at the station. And I've been at the station since 2007. I was a DJ for 3 years, and then I switched over to do this show in 2011. I'm always considering new guests. If you want to send me an email to Janeane, J-A-N-E-A-N-E at KUCI.org. That's the hard part, J-A-N-E-A-N-E at KUCI.org. And again, you can learn more by visiting my show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Every single show that I've ever done, I believe, is on there, even during the pandemic, which is cool. I've got on-camera interviews of various guests, and it's going back till 2011. All right, so that's a wrap for me. We're going to play a little music. I hope you enjoyed today's show. This was really a great way to kick off Wednesday, and I'll be back next Wednesday at 9. Have a great week, everyone.